residential connection.
I'm talking to a lighting specialist to arc residential to smart house.
Welcome to Residential Tech Talks. I'm Jeremy Glowacki, executive editor of Residential Tech Today. On this week's podcast, Charlie Porritt joins us from Portsmouth, New Hampshire, where he is CEO of RustSound, an internationally respected leader in manufacturing of multi-room audio products and technology. While it seems as if those of us who know Charlie today only associate with him as a 24-year leader at RustSound, they're failing to recognize early stops in his career at such other legendary brands as Harman and Speakercraft, and blasts from the past Yamo and Colorado VNet. Do you remember those? Today, we'll look back a bit on our guest's career arc, finding out what wisdom he picked up along the way and developed on the job in his career role at RustSound. And we'll explore some of RustSound's recent cool product introductions, including the Ava Series Mini AVR, which is now shipping. Charlie Porritt, welcome to Residential Tech Talks. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
You and I, we had a chance to catch up a while back and had a kind of an informal conversation, and a little bit has transpired since then in terms of product shipping and that sort of thing. But we're recording this one on March 5th, and we're experiencing some early spring weather in the Midwest. I'm assuming you're getting bizarre warm weather even up where you are.
We definitely, I was talking to Maureen this morning, and I think we are expecting rain for the next 2 weeks.
So 2 weeks of rain.
Nice. Yes.
Excellent. Yeah, that's always going to go well when ground gets saturated and it just doesn't stop. I don't know. Things are a mess, but I'd rather have rain than, not any at all. So it's great to see California finally getting some water table work growing over there, but then it's like mudslides happen, you can't win.
Yeah. That'll be an interesting one.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I wanted to start, we'll spend a lot of time on the new products, because I think it's great to see RustSound in the product news, innovation and developments there. And that's a lot of what we talk about here, but we also like to talk about personal stories and career arcs, and this is an industry podcast, so we like to kind of remind folks where we came from. Your peers might, be watching this and want to hear some, stories from those years. So maybe start us off from the very beginning, how you even got into this business in the first place.
Well, it was always a passion for audio, right? Changing out car stereos as a teenager, if you will, and then ended up going to college and getting the job where you wore the tie and sat in traffic and pretty much went in on the third day and said, I can't do this. This is just no fun. I was in computers at the time, and it was just, so I ended up going and working retail at a car audio place selling cell phones way back when it was a dollar a minute. And ultimately worked, did a traditional path of working retail, ended up working for a large independent rep firm, and then ultimately getting a job at Harman. And really, Harman is where really it was great, Fortune 500 company, lots of training, and really I was a kid. But one of the things that I did at Harman that was a little bit different than most other salespeople was I kind of buddied up with all the product managers, and I figured that, if I could talk to them about the products that I needed, that it would help make my life as a salesperson much easier. And ultimately, getting involved with product and technology really early has helped me, literally through my whole career path, and being able to sit with a customer and talk sales, or sit with a manufacturer or an engineering team and talk technology, and try to make sure that we choose the best pathway to drive products forward, right? That's what this business is all about. Everybody walks into a new booth and says, hey, what's old? No, that's not what they say. What's new? Right. So I really cut my teeth in trying to be a good salesman, but also make sure that I delivered to my customers what they were asking for. sometimes, you know, it was a matter of who had the voice in the engineer's ear saying, hey, Europe would be saying less power, less features, and more money. And we'd be in the US saying more power, more features. Yes, we do want a remote control.
Interesting.
So that's really how I started back at my days at Harman Kardon.
Well, I was going to say, like, I thought my first question in the booth as a journalist was really novel. You know, I thought asking what's new is like the only, I was the only one asking. No, I'm just kidding. I try so hard not to do that because I know it's the thing that everyone says, but it's really hard to keep track of what everyone is introducing ahead of time and saying, hey, I remember you were introducing this new mini AVR. Can you tell me about that? I wish I was that good at remembering everybody's product lineups, but it does always fall back to that question. So Harman Kardon, let's go back. What were some of those early products? Because I think people are nostalgic for this. We're technology people here, audience, you know, the folks that are listening to this probably want to just a little touch point in the historical context of what you were introducing.
Yeah, there were some really great moments. It was very interesting working at Harman Kardon during the time that I was there after kind of the Harman Consumer Group separated. So JBL stayed in Woodbury, New York, and Harman Kardon went out to Northridge, California. And Dr. Harman was very active. He would come and sit in our meetings, and he was a full participant. And I'll never forget one time we were working on our first AVR receiver, right? And the head product guys, we have the lid off of an AVR from another manufacturer. And Dr. Harman's pointing in the chassis, and the engineer's like, hey, remember, that's live. So Dr. Harman, believe it or not, grabbed this engineer's hand and started pushing it into the chassis. And of course, the engineer jumped back.
What?
And he goes, finally, get some liveliness out of
you. Oh my God, really?
Yeah, he was very much of a very active person, really loved and had a huge passion no matter what his age. Uh-huh. And it was great to see him, you know, and at the end of the day, we carried his namesake. He was very happy at the time. We were not a end of the month company, really just trying to drive the business and be as good as we can and introduce, you know, the first AVR receiver in our world, which, you know, was kind of groundbreaking back then. Was we're like, okay, we need to be below $1,000 and we need to be above 100 watts per channel. And it's like, you know, we can't do this. Mm. So we did come out at $999, but I think it was either 80 or 90 watts a channel.
Okay.
With discrete rear amplification.
Okay.
So it was definitely a very interesting and fun time back then.
Yeah. And now, you had made the move out to Northridge then?
No. So both the two salespeople, one lived in New Jersey and I lived in Ohio, and we covered the whole country.
Okay.
And we were in California probably twice a quarter.
Okay.
So very active, not only in the field, but also at the offices.
And then, how long were you there before you moved on to your next stop?
Well, so the career at Harman kind of took a lot of interesting turns, right? I was in the room when we acquired Audio Access, and that was kind of really my intro to custom install. Mm-hmm. And I remember talking to Helma Paulson going, you guys sell these one box at a time? You know, because at Harman Kardon, we were selling everything at a skid.
Okay.
Or multiple skids.
Yeah. Go.
And so they ended up sticking us in a room with Harman Kardon, Fosgate Onionics, Harman Video, and Audio Access, and said, you know, you guys need to blend all the rep firms together. So you come out with one rep in each territory. And really, it was really interesting getting to know and understand the custom install market. And right, this is really the early 90s. Mm-hmm. You know, multi-room, multi-zone, it was pretty much Audio Access. And I think Sony had a product called DTS or something like that out there. DST.
Yeah, that's the reference point I always hear is the Audio Access thing in terms of making the first real custom integration multi-room product. So Yeah, that's a historical point in time for sure for the industry. And to be there kind of in the room, you know, doing that, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and then we were able to, I'll say, blend a lot of those brands together. And that's actually how Citation ended up coming out with kind of a home theater solution, which ultimately evolved to JBL Synthesis, which obviously stands today. And that was kind of an interesting process where they pretty much took Lexicon and Fosgate Onionics and put them head-to-head to see who had the best surround sound processing. The Lexicon unit ended up winning out because way back then they had a monochrome touchscreen remote versus the Fosgate. I think it was a wired remote back then.
Oh, wow.
So it was really a lot of fun of, you know, kind of selling $25,000, $50,000 home theater systems.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's amazing. So you go from like, we're trying to be more consumer driven retail to really, you know, the upper reaches of what our home theater custom install world had become, or, and still is in a lot of ways, maybe not so much home theater, but still the high end luxury.
Yeah. And then after that, ended up making the leap over to Yamo. And really, they were just really starting their custom line, in-wall, in-ceiling speakers, volume controls. But they pretty much had a speaker that you could sell to anything. Yes, we have a speaker with a light in it. What else would you like? Really great family, great people. And you know, really taught me a lot more about the human side of the business. You know, Harman absolutely earned its reputation. It's definitely a place that's tough to live and survive in. And if you can sell, you can survive it. Mm. If you can't sell and hit your numbers, you know, it's a relatively short stay. After Yamo, actually one brand we didn't bring up was an ex-Harman boss ended up calling me to end up at BIC America.
Oh, right. Yeah, I forgot about
that. And this was kind of an interesting thing, right? This was all pre-internet, and they had a Consumer Reports number one rated bookshelf speaker that had a dealer that would buy them by the tractor trailer load and stick them in his car audio bays and took out ads in the back of Stereo Review magazine. So kind of an interesting path there. And then that ended up getting sold. So I started, actually, believe it or not, a .com business doing home theater chairs and things like that. Mm. And, you know, after the .com bust is when ended up becoming the first Eastern regional salesperson for Speakercraft. And that's back when Ed Hasse and Jeff King were there and worked with Jeremy. You know, and it was a crazy time, great products, and, you know, really the world of no rules.
Interesting. Yeah. Another mile marker for the industry for sure is Speakercraft and the involvement with the in-wall speaker and all that. So, I think that was before the Sonance, you know, kind of branding and who came first, that, you know,
yeah,
who's the first in wall. I keep wanting to say in ceiling because so much is in ceiling now, but the first in wall speaker and all that marketing hype. So you were there in those really early days.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun, a lot of battles out in the field doing a lot of different things. And so I ended up leaving Speakercraft when they first got sold under the new ownership. I ended up seeing an opportunity with an East Coast based company, and I've lived on the East Coast my whole life. So it was kind of like, okay, really would like to stay on the East Coast and grow. And that was Russound, and I was their first Eastern regional salesperson too. But obviously coming from Harman and a lot of these other companies, including Speakercraft, where we, you know, growth was, you know, we drank Red Bulls for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. You know, it was, let's go and attack this marketplace. And so came to Russound. Really, we grew the company a great bit with a lot of award-winning products and growing the company to, I think, a peak of about 175 employees. And then around 2007, 2008 is when they appointed me as CEO, right at the peak of the housing crisis.
That was all your fault, apparently.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. It was like, okay, Joe's like, this looks like a good time to retire.
Yeah.
So after all that growth, it's now, okay, learn how to manage a company where you're losing, you know, anywhere from $5 to $10 million in sales a year.
Man.
And how do you continue to rescale a business and readjust? I will say a lot of the things that I learned through that helped ultimately through COVID, because, you know, through COVID, we kept getting things thrown at us that were obstacles, right? I used to say that I'd wake up in the morning thinking of chips, meaning computer chips and ships, mm-hmm. right? Freight went from, let's call it $2,000 a container to over $20,000. And it almost seemed like you couldn't turn around and not have a chip or something else disappear with no heads up.
Yeah.
You know, during COVID, you know, it was a tough time, I think, for a lot of manufacturers. We were able to keep the whole team together, batten our hatches down, and continue to redesign some of our key products, sometimes up to three times,
wow.
Which, you know, in the product development cycle, to do that in less than a year is just crazy. But, you know, we didn't have any options. People were buying audio gear left and right, and we wanted to continue to supply it.
Well,
so good.
Yeah, I was going to ask you to back up just a tiny bit and talk about the company when you came in terms of what the personality of the company was and kind of the mission, maybe from, you know, let's talk about it before the housing bubble burst and really where it stood at that point, and then kind of the evolution of what you were trying to serve the market with. And I know a lot of what RustSound has been known for is a distribution partnership. So you buy through dealers buy through distribution, integrators buy through distribution, RustSound products. But you know, you had the early product with ABUS in terms of multi-room audio. It's been a problem solver for amplification over the years. Maybe where was it when you came in? And then that evolution of having to make things work when things were going crazy with, you know, the economy, and then where it is today.
Great point to take me back to. I joined RustSound, and really RustSound had put kind of their foot forward with their multi-room, multi-zone controllers. And let's call it a audio access light. But one of the things that they did that was really a key item was everything an installer needed was in a single box. Your keypads were in there. Your IR was in there, meaning your receivers, things like that. And that just wasn't done in the past, right? I mean, at Audio Access, we didn't make any IR. We would just say, hey, go buy it from Zantac. You know, the realities are looking at it and going, hey, here's who we are. We created this little kit mentality so that, you know, when you show up on the job site, everything's in here. And at the same time, we were launching ABUS, right? The production builder business was really booming. Mm-hmm. And, you know, basically speaker wire versus today was not as expensive, but it was really expensive versus Cat 5. So really what we wanted to try to do was get the cost of pre-wiring down substantially. So you could do a pre-wire for a house for, let's call it $100 or $200, and then finish it off. Mm. And really, the production builders really liked it. And, you know, really, audio was, it seemed to be audio, you know, say, if you will, technology was one of the categories that the builders really navigated to, right? Structured wiring, all the cables coming back to a centralized location. And, you know, that's really where ABUS started taking off, because we made boxes that would fit within that structured wiring box where most audio manufacturers, including our CAAs and other multi-room, multi-zone controllers, just wouldn't fit inside those boxes. So it was a great product and very simple without a lot of hassles. Yes, was there a remote control? Yes, but you could walk up to a physical keypad, push volume power on, it would come on, it would play music. So it was really a basic and good system that people weren't so confused versus a control system, right?
Yeah.
Much easier. And we kind of continued that pathway and made some headways, came out with a product called a CAV and CAM, which we had and I'll call it single line LCD display that would have words come across of it. And, you know, back then it was kind of audio access, AMX were doing some of those things. And I believe Crestron was, but really Crestron, I think, was still much more in the commercial space. We really never ran into those guys. And I think those were some of the products that helped really make Russound grow. Really the production builder, meaning kind of the entry level with the volume control, speaker selectors, a bus, and then the controller. So good, easy entry level, mid and upper level products.
And so when the production, obviously with that production home partnership, so to speak, that's kind of what I would imagine really took a hit with the housing bubble bursting, is that those big developments just sort of stopped.
It was like someone turned the faucet off.
Yeah.
The dealers, and you know, we were dealing with some of the largest production builder integrators, and it was like, all right, we just have to finish up this home section, and you know, we're no longer working on section two or section eight of other building things. We're going to build houses, but really the accessory side of the business went away. During the peak of the building business, one of the things I said was that, you know, basically if you wanted to, you could park a car in a garage and write that in your mortgage. And of course, when the foreclosures started happening, you know, those $20,000 40-inch Marantz TVs were no longer hanging on the wall. The electronics were all gone. So really that element of making the sale of audio or accessories kind of went away, and it's really still hurt us today, so that it's not really an item that really gets written into the mortgage anymore.
That's really funny with the car. That I've never heard that one, but that was so much the case. And now we're kind of talking, interestingly enough, I just got back from the third annual Lightapalooza conference, and part of the argument is that you're getting involved in the lighting, and that can be a, you know, an earlier, I don't know necessarily a mortgage thing, but it's earlier in the buying process. So you're included in the construction budget rather than kind of the add-on at the end. So we're always trying to find our way into that little part of the process of building a home, if possible. So then you've never strayed from the idea of using distribution as your way to get product to market, correct? Like that, it's never been appealing to go dealer direct versus using your distribution partners.
So it's kind of funny you bring this up. So literally yesterday morning, I had this conversation because I used to write a lot of business plans, and we used to walk what I'd say down the middle of the road. Our business was, let's call it 55% distribution, 45% to direct to dealer. Okay. It is now very heavily weighted over to distribution. Obviously, a lot of those dealers during the housing crisis went away and went out of business. And it's safer to do business through distribution, as well as, you know, dealers really now look at and go, what do I need today, right? And they want to be able to go pick it up in the morning, install it in the afternoon, and get paid in the evening. You know, I think that ultimately our direct-to-dealer business probably will grow with us coming out with such mainstream new products. You know, the products that won the Best of Show for ISE from you guys, Residential Systems, right, is a product that has our first HDMI, and you know, it's $299 and $399 at retail. So we're starting to hit price points that we've really never been at prior.
And let's talk about some of those products. So you originally introduced at Cedia Expo in September a whole lineup there, and what I would imagine you've done in terms of development is you had like every other audio manufacturer. Again, you're waiting on chips, you're waiting on supply chain to get sorted out, and then all of a sudden everyone has a new AVR. You went a different direction where you went with the mini AVR, which you're not the only one doing that, but it's to me it's a brilliant concept, which is we don't need these really big boxes anymore. What we need to do is figure out a way to tuck things in behind the television, simply put, still provide multi-channel audio, higher quality audio, whether it's to a soundbar, in ceiling speakers, whatever it is. So that maybe talk about the philosophy of where you went with that, that particular the mini AVR kind of concept.
Yeah. So to me, it really looks like it started with, the Apple TV, mm-hmm. right? So here's this little box that doesn't take up much room. And, a lot of people just started putting Velcro on the back of their TVs and putting them there. And then, of course, the trend continued for people putting boxes behind the TV, since obviously the TVs were growing and you could make a substantially larger hole. So you didn't need to have that equipment room. You didn't need to have some of the gear as big as it was, but people wanted better sound for their TV. We came out with a little 2x35, and that was literally the product's tagline, was better sound for TV. It did okay, but really, we were at ISE last year, meaning 2023, in January, February, and we were sharing a booth with Leon, and we are actually showing the mini AVRs, if you will. And Leon's like, hey, we'd love to stick this into one of our custom soundbar boxes. And as well as talking to our partners, people are like, hey, here, shrink this, do that. And really, we try to listen to that feedback because, if it's not installable, if it doesn't fit what the market needs, not only in performance and features, but also in size and installability, the product will be a failure. I mean, you look at all the details that we've looked at this piece in terms of the feature sets. Basically, it has five, if you will, I'll call it five inputs. But the mounting, we have a little, I don't have one in front of me, but, just kind of a one element, you screw it on the wall and you just slide it down and it fits. Mm. And then we have your traditional, if you will, I'll call them the little crosses, which I can never do those perfectly. I don't know if anyone else can, but just trying to make sure that the install's easy to do and make it small enough so it can fit behind a TV. I think that other manufacturers were looking at the same trends and going, hey, we really should go after this because people want something better than, let's just call it a powered soundbar. Right. This definitely has a much better amplifier, and you can do some really good things. One of the things that we showed at Cedia was our sound bar, which will end up shipping in June. And just like the AVRs, we listened. We showed it. It actually had downward firing ports at Cedia. We ended up getting rid of the ports and putting two more passive radiators in the unit. And now it can hang on the wall or can be placed on a credenza or something else if someone else wants. So I think really one of the big things that we do here at RussSound is really talk to the people installing the product. I've tried to convince our PR company that, hey, my press picture, I'd love to be on a ladder installing a speaker. And they're like, no one does that. but at the end of the day, that's how I kind of cut my teeth, is doing installs, and I really like it. Sometimes I find it frustrating, but when we do a new product, I literally do sit here at my house. I install it myself, owner's manual and stuff like that, no other help. And I find it really helps make sure that we have a good product.
Explain to me, just so I get it, what the change from the down firing to passive radiator design, what the feedback was saying about that. Why wouldn't they want that original design in the prototype that you changed it to?
It made it virtually impossible to sit it on top of a credenza because of the ports were down, right? We didn't want to put the ports facing up and get all the dust, right?
Yeah, fair, fair.
So just really looking at it going, hey, you know, not everyone's mounting a TV on the wall. Another element that we did on the soundbar is on the edges, they're beveled. So if someone pulls out the TV and turns it, it's not the soundbar that's going to hit the wall first. So really just trying to look at things and what goes on in the real world to make sure that the installer, as well as, well, ultimately the homeowner is happy with it. Hey, I can turn the TV as much as I want, and the sound still comes along with it.
Yeah, I like that you're solving problems. You're coming up with innovations. You're not just trying to follow what everybody else is doing. I mean, both of those products sound like they're doing something different, which is cool. And then your third one in the collection of new introductions is your D-series amplifiers?
Correct. So kind of just like the mini AVRs, we looked at our products and said, okay, we need to up our game in multiple ways. So we looked at what are the pressure points for everyone. And obviously, freight was a consideration. So size and weight, and looking at technology going, okay, what if we redid these amplifiers, right? How did we buy amplifiers? I'll say in the 80s, by the pound, right? If you didn't break your back, it wasn't a good enough amplifier. Well, with amplifier technology as well as power supply technology, we've been able to up our power substantially and make a much more musical amplifier. So this month we have a new SKU for us. It's a 12 by 90 amplifier that is much more musical than most of our prior multi-channel amplifiers. It has a what we call a voltage tracking power supply. So when you need power, it's there versus typical power supplies. It's either on or it's off. It's not really running with the reserve. So at the low volumes, you're able to get that bass enhancement that a lot of people miss at low volumes. The other element that we've added is substantially more features. I mean, these guys have high pass, low pass, auto on, volume, stuff like that. And it just is really an amazing feat that we've done. We want to continue to be that brand that provides a very high value product to the marketplace. Just to give you a reference, we had a 8x50, so 8 channels times 50 amplifier, that let's call it was $1,250. Our new 12x75, so we're picking up 4 additional channels and, you know, 25 watts per channel. And when you do 12 channels, that's a whole lot of power for $1,299 retail. So really just looking at it and going, look at the power going up, the costs are going down, and the feature sets are going up and through the roof.
Oh, that's great. So now you've got the D1290 and D1675 that look like they're available in the month of March. Is that still accurate?
Yes.
And then the D890 is scheduled for Q3.
Yep. Yeah. And so the 890 will be $999. The 1275 or 1290, sorry about that, will be $1299. And the 1675 will be $1699, $1,700.
Well, that's a lot of great new stuff. Now, part of what you are, I remember when we spoke before that you're pretty proud of was the industrial design of your products too, trying to up the game a little bit on that as well.
Yeah, big time. So this is kind of one of those soft spots for me. And this was, you know, going back to my days at Harman, you know, really we were involved with Dan Ashcraft, who did most of the industrial design there. And going through that, really, that's a passion. I love good-looking products. And when I ended up here at Russound, we had Alan Boothroyd from Meridian doing all of our industrial design. And really, I think that part of it is Maureen, as a female owner, really looks to aesthetics. And, you know, I think that we kind of got away from that for a period of time with personnel changes. And it would be one product manager would want this, another would want something else. So now we have a unified design and have someone on board that does that. And it's, I laugh because our first CES we went to, we ended up in the automotive section because it was the easiest hall to get to, right? And it's like, all right, we need to leave. We have nothing to do here. And he's like, no, I need to, this leads the world in industrial design. Let's spend some time. Let's look at trends. Mm. So really having a family look, and the products look gorgeous. And I think, you know, will absolutely look just like any high-end amplifier or product in anyone's rack versus something that, not that we threw it together before, but there's just much better of a family.
Right. And, you know, as we kind of wrap up, maybe talk a little bit more about the way that you, your RCI program for one thing, and as well your dealer programs and support that folks who maybe whoever work with you already know these things, but those who are looking to new products from RustSound might want to know.
Yeah. So, I mean, so one of the things is selling through distribution, right? It's kind of tough to control what would go onto the web. And I'll call it probably 15 years ago, 10 years ago, we introduced a line called Sphere, and we ended up having those units locked down to the MAC address. And we learned a lot of problems with Asian manufacturing and one sticker going on the box and another one not being the same one ending up on the back of the unit. So trying to unlock it wasn't the easiest. Mm. But one of the reasons why we did it was we wanted our products that were very expensive, not just to be bought and sold on the web. We want, you know, an integrator to be involved. And so we came up with this RustSound certified installer that basically they say, hey, we're not going to sell this on the web. And, you know, we have a whole host of training things to go along with it. So the installers know how to install it, as well as what we have found is because they're an educated installer, that the homeowner really gets a better user experience because, hey, this is programmed the right way. This is done the right way. And it really has helped us try to fight, you know, anything on the web. I mean, it's crazy. We've looked at unilateral pricing, transparency policies, things like that. And just, you know, when you, it's the game of whack-a-mole, no matter which manufacturer you are. Even I know of a speaker manufacturer that I was talking to him about the transparency program. And he goes, we just got a speaker back with a transparency sticker on it. And it was a counterfeit.
Oh, geez.
And it's like, you know, how do these things happen? Mm. So really our RCI program really is trying to make sure that, you know, the products get installed by a certified installer and that the installer's compensated for his work and try to make their battle less hard trying to combat the web.
Yeah, that sounds like a challenge for sure to keep up with, but a good effort on your part to do it for sure. Charlie, I really appreciate your time today. It was great catching up, again and learning more about these new products. And I hope folks, reach out to you and you, have great new business as a result. So thanks again for your time today.
Well, thank you for your time. And we're so excited about launching new products pretty much every month this summer, which will be great for us as well as the installers. Ultimately, I think the installers and the homeowners are really the ones that'll win with these new tools and products.
And we'll see you, I would imagine, next at CEDIA Expo in September. Any other events coming up?
Exactly. We do a bunch of calendar days. We're very active in the field as well as online. So, you know, check back to RustSound. We list our trainings. We typically try to do 2 trainings a month. We have no issues doing individual trainings, but we'll be in the field. But really, the next big event will be CEDIA.
Great. Well, I will definitely see you there. And again, Charlie, thanks again for your time today.
Look forward to it. Thank you for your time.
Charlie Porritt is CEO of RustSound, the respected manufacturer of audio products and technology. You can learn more about these new products that we just talked about at RustSound.com. And that wraps up today's show, which was produced by Residential Tech Today, IPW, and Pretty Easy Podcast. If you're new to Residential Tech Talks, please subscribe to the podcast wherever you watch or listen to this episode. Also, check out all the latest residential tech news at our magazine's website, restechtoday.com, where you can also subscribe to the print or digital magazine and to our Tuesday and Thursday email newsletters. Until next time, please stay safe, stay inspired, and let us know if you have a great story to tell.
Residential Tech Talks, lighting specialist, Residential Tech Talks.